This is the week after Thanksgiving, and I'm Steve Weiss, sitting here with my good friend, well, that's an overstatement, Jim Labenthal, and we'll bring you another episode of Taking to the Street. And look, you better put your seatbelts on, you better get comfortable. We've got a lot to talk about today. Jim's acolytes, they should batten down the hatches from his old Navy days, because there's been so much going on this week. And next week, there's going to be even more. As a matter of fact, I don't see it calming down until we get to the new year, and that's a whole different story. But why don't we lead off with the topic of the moment? And for that, I'll turn to you.
Thank you, Steve. Excellent intro. I do consider you a good friend, regardless of what you just said.
But I do anyway. As well, but I'll never admit it publicly, that is.
Anyway, big news. And a lot of big news this week, but Omicron is the thing I want to start with. Okay, the latest variant of the COVID-19 virus. Two things I want to say about this. And both of them, let's just get to the punchline. You should be bullish here. I heard what you just said, should be bullish here, but here's why. First off, there are treatments and vaccines for COVID. Let me start there. Do you want to be out of this market? I'm asking the generic listener, do you want to be out of this market when Pfizer or Moderna or whomever says, hey, you know what? We've got Omicron licked. We've got the vaccine. We've got the treatment. We've seen what happens when that news comes out. The market rips. It's going to happen. It's just a question of when. The second thing that I want to point out is that when you have a cataclysmic shock like COVID-19 over the last 2 years, there are inevitably aftershocks. And that's what Omicron is. It's an aftershock. It is not supposed to, nor will it have the same effect as the original cataclysm. I would use as an example a couple of things as far as aftershocks go. When we had the tech telecom boom and bust, after that, you had the aftershock of the accounting scandals that had been swept under the rug while times were good and then came to light. Now, that's not a perfect analogy, nor is the perfect analogy of the Eurozone being threatened by the peripheral countries after the great financial crisis. But the point still stands. When you have a cataclysm, you have aftershocks, you're not supposed to respond to them.
Well, Jim, before you take us back to the Roman Empire for another analogy that's not going to be on point, let me just say this. This is not a few accounting scandals popping up. This is something that's going to be with us for probably our lifetimes. Now, there are vaccines to deal with it. Having spoken to the people at Moderna and other areas, they just don't know. Delta had 2 variants. This has 32. Right now, the symptoms apparently have been light, but in a very small segment of the population have caught it, and in younger people. And it's also mostly evolved through the unvaccinated, although some of the vaccinated have gotten. So the point is, we don't know. Now, if this comes out to be more deadly, which nobody's really saying right now, and I don't know if that'll be the case, because the scientists don't know it's the case. And I chuckle when these people come out with massive drop-dead statements, when in fact, even the people that are looking at the data on it have no idea. But to me, it's not an all-in market. It's that you have to be cautious because you don't know, and we don't know how far this will extend. A couple of things that I do know, or I feel very strongly about, is that it will be inflationary. If people are not going back to the office, if it hits the supply chains, Malaysia opened up not that long ago, a month and a half ago, it'll be inflationary. And that's the issue. So it's not Omicron itself. It's what the impact of it's going to be. And that is, my friend, the principal issue. Will it drive prices higher, which means will it pull the Fed in more in terms of being more aggressive? So that's the concern. So I don't think you're ever all in a market, by the way.
You and I have a difference, and we've discussed this many times, of time frames. I am a long-term investor. My clients are long-term investors. What I try to teach them and what I want our listeners to know, if you're a long-term investor, don't react to the noise. I mean, I can't tell you how many emails and texts I got on Friday. Oh my God, Omicron, don't interrupt me yet. I see you. Our listeners can't see you taking a deep breath. Just hang on there, champ. I can't tell you how many texts and emails I got about, oh my God, what should I do? The answer is don't react to every little thing that comes down the pike. I heard you, Steve. Okay. You're on point when you say we're going to live with this virus for the rest of our lives. Yeah. Like we've lived with the flu, like we've lived with HIV, a number of other viruses. You're right. This is not going to be eradicated, but we are going to live with it. Before I hand this back to you, because I can see you're being impatient, let's talk about where the economy is right now. Okay. Atlanta GDP now, 9% growth this quarter. And I'll grant you that's this quarter, not what's going to come.
Aggressive and always way too high.
That's pretty darn high. Also, initial jobless claims today, 222,000. Job market's strong. Despite what you said, all right, supply chain bottlenecks are starting to ease. I'll grant you it's green shoots and they could turn down, but they are starting to ease. Here's the important part. The economy globally and nationally doesn't look like it wants to go into shutdown. Did you watch that?
Nobody's shutting down. Shutdown's off the table. That's not a question.
Well, without a shutdown. then why are we going to freak out about this like we did a year and a half ago?
Well, I don't think anybody's freaking out. I mean, the market's down a few percent. Really? And by the way, Jim, you had so many stocks that were down 25%, 30% before this even occurred. So let's not cloud what the underlying trend in the market was with saying, oh, it's all related to this variant. That's just not factual.
Okay. You are correct that the market was a little lousy going into this, but it's unassailable at the last 4 days. We've seen a market drop off. And the only thing that's been propping up the indices, frankly, is Apple. Apple set a new all-time high yesterday. Pfizer, a couple of the other FANG names. I mean, NVIDIA still hangs in there. I know that's not the N in FANG, but still it's very close. You do make a good point. The average stock, I read this yesterday before yesterday's decline, the average stock in the stock market is down 14% from its 52-week high. I submit to you, Steve, that that's the opportunity. I submit to you that the average stock being down 14% predated, in some ways predicted, Omicron.
Let's do this. So you're long-term, my core position is long-term too. Let's not talk long-term, okay? Because long-term cures a lot of ills because the market has gone up. If you want to talk long-term, market's a hell of a lot higher than it was when it started out under the button tree.
That's exactly my point.
I get it. But it's always about where the point of entry is and putting new money in. Now, you can stick with what you have. Some will work, some won't. Some are gone forever in terms of not working forever. Okay? So you always have cash to deploy. So let's forget that your clients are all long-term, that you don't want them coming in out of the market. That's actually a good strategy.
We can't forget that, okay? But I'll let you keep going.
Okay, but let's talk about the here and now and where if the opportunity is today or if the opportunity is going to be better tomorrow. Here's how I see it. We started to get some slower economic numbers. I forget what the release was yesterday, but it was near, I think it was a 10-year low economic number, okay? We're starting to see real estate mortgage applications come down. Now, will they come back in with the 10-year trading with a 1.4 handle? In all likelihood, but the point is that the marginal buyer or the marginal refinancer is sort of leaving the market. Now, when you talk about Omicron, you're not talking about shutdowns again. That's off the table. Nobody's got the appetite to do that except maybe New Zealand or Australia. But everybody in the developed world is not going to do it. In terms of the undeveloped world, the emerging market world, maybe China does it. Who knows? But we do know that unlike the flu, this causes massive sick outs, which impact the supply chain. Massive. We saw that. And there's no appetite in Malaysia, in Taiwan, which has been good about containing it, in China to have these massive, massive sick outs. So you could see slowing down. If you do, to me, that's the primary risk. We just don't know.
I'll grant you that we don't know, and we never know the future. Our business, yours and mine, is predicting the future, and you have to take a stance. You're taking a stance. I respect it. I'm taking a stance. It is different. I do have to give this qualifier. I can't just get away from the long term. I can't just ignore the long term investing because it is central to my thesis. It's central to who I am. And the truth of the matter is, if you just stay in the market and ignore every bad thing that comes down and just stick in with your seatbelt on, you're going to make money.
So
but,
why talk
but,
about
but,
it?
But
why,
slow
why
down.
Talk about
slow
it,
down.
Jim?
Slow down. Compound sentence. I know it's hard for you to understand, but yeah,
it's actually putting me to sleep. It's not hard for me to understand.
But you have to be in high-quality companies. You did touch on this. I'm going to give you credit. You have to be in companies that will make it through thick and thin. You can't be in fly-by-night, heavily indebted companies that can't make it through a downturn. All that said, I don't think we're going into a downturn. The data right now doesn't show that we're going that way. Last week, TSA airplane passenger throughput was the highest level since the pandemic.
Thanksgiving weekend. Thanksgiving weekend, Jim.
It's still the highest level since the pandemic hit. That's just a fact. And if you look at the trend, it's going up. Also, look at Las Vegas room rates. They are going through the roof. Not just double digits. We're talking like 50% over 2019.
Jim, I know. I'm booking trips, okay? Airfares are out of control. Hotel rooms are out of control. But also, we were going to Morocco. Guess what? We're not because it's shut down. So those are issues. There's no doubt when you suppress people, when you kept them home and they weren't able to travel or leave their homes, that there's this fire hose effect where everybody's rushing through the same door. I know that's going on now. You want to live in the now and in the present? Okay, I like to do a little bit of that too, but I'm trying to look at the future and what happens when that initial rush is done. Household incomes are high. Household savings are very high because people haven't been going out to spend money. So you want to look at the future? Let's look at the future. In the future, to me, it's not going to be that easy. So what I've got right now is I've got a Fed where Powell came out and said, let's take transient out of the vocabulary.
Yeah.
That was a harsh statement. There was no soft pedaling that, and that took the market down. My expectation, as people know from the last episode, was that the Fed would finish tapering by March and start tightening in May. I still think that's the case, and the market has not come to grips with it.
I'm glad we're segueing. I think it's time to segue to the Fed, because that is the other big piece of news, exactly what you just said, that Powell said it's time to retire the word transitory and that they are going to discuss accelerating the taper. A couple of thoughts on this. One, first off, the poor guy. The last 6 months, however long it's been, that he's been sitting out there saying transitory, taking the heat from the media, from politicians, from investors, he threw in the towel. He raised the white flag and said, no mas, I give up. I have to tell you, that feels like the absolute tell of inflation is now about to come down. And I know you don't want to talk about long-term investing. I do. I need to give you a parable. A parable, Steve. You like parables, I'm sure. Qualcomm, all right? When Jay Powell threw in the towel, it reminded me of Qualcomm. This year, January sets an all-time high, comes down, and for 9 months does nothing. It's down 25%, and it stinks. And it stinks, and you're making fun of me. Hurting my feelings, Steve, by the way. Making fun of me on air on CNBC. You know what? If you're patient and you waited that ninth month and one day, it rockets higher and is a great stock for where you are right now. You've heard me say this before. Patience is a virtue. It's the biggest virtue in this market. I think Powell gave up at the exact wrong time.
Okay, well, some people said that because commodity prices have been rolling over. And why have they been rolling over? You can argue it's the chicken or the egg. It's because Powell has been saying that we're going to tighten sooner. That's essentially what they said. That's what the minutes said when they came out last week. So maybe that's part of leading to commodities rolling over. Commodities are speculative dollars. But the difference between me making fun of you about Qualcomm and others selling it and puking it at the bottom is that they can't write history. Powell can write history because he's the Fed. So whether or not he thinks inflation is transitory, clearly he doesn't now. He thinks inflation is here to stay. And we both agreed last time that wages are here to stay and only going higher. If Powell thinks that inflation is going to be persistent and bigger problem than he thought, then they're going to tighten more. And even if inflation is coming down, and inflation is coming down, likely because the economy will not be at 9%, as the Atlanta Fed or you go to the St. Louis Fed or any of these like out of the line, right? He can have a double issue then. He could tighten at the wrong time as the economy is sort of leveling off. That would be an issue.
Here's the yin and yang of what you're saying, and I'm going to partially agree with you, okay? Because what Powell's doing right now, let's see how much he remembers the fourth quarter of 2018. He got his fanny kicked, Steve. He got his fanny kicked by the market. Now, here's the other side of that coin, and I think we really need to dance with this. When the Fed raises rates for the first time, that's not the death knell, okay? The last two rate cycles, you had more than 2 years where the markets went up 10% plus S&P 500 during that time frame. What it does mean is volatility increases. And volatility should increase. I mean, volatility not as measured by the VIX, but as measured by the S&P 500 versus the 50-day moving average or the 200-day moving average. S&P hasn't touched the 200-day moving average in about a year and a half. I mean, that's insane. Volatility has been too low. It's likely to pick up. That's what the impact is of a more aggressive Fed. It's not a, oh my God, let's run for the hills.
To me, the S&P and the VIX and the NASDAQ and those indices are bullshit indices, okay? Because you've got
Is this a cable program?
No, it is. We have a mature listening base. We're trying to spice it up. But you've got the indices that tell a completely different story than what the average stock is doing. As you noted, the average stock's down 14%. So let's forget about the indices when we talk about what the market's doing. That's what the top line's doing. If you only want to invest in indices, and I think that's a great strategy for most people, that you're fine with that. But if you're talking stocks, you can't go back and forth and say, well, the market's only down 4%, because that's not accurate.
I'm talking about volatility in general.
And what I'm talking about is the VIX. Also, the VIX was trading at, 20 or so, 18 before the spike, but the average stock was still down dramatically.
So let's go back to where you were, because you made a good point, which I'm sure all of us are surprised that I'm acknowledging, but this is about
your entry points. The surprise is you understood it.
All right. I'm not going to go back and forth with you. Let's stay on point. You did make a good point. It's about the entry point. That 14% down on the average stock, that was before yesterday's open. Now it's probably down 17%.
Yep.
And I'm going to submit to you easily that I do think this is a good entry point. It doesn't mean it's the bottom. And this might be a little bit of difference between the two of us. I am never going to sit there and say I've got this locked in. All right. If I tell you today, as I am, it's a good entry point, that doesn't mean it can't go down over the next week.
No, you can't pick bottoms and tops. I mean, it's foolish to try.
But I actually think, Steve, that this month of December is likely to be very good for the markets. You are still up about 24% on the S&P 500. A lot of people don't want to sell right now. They don't want to take those capital gains. And frankly, we've seen the buy the dip mentality. There's a reason for it. If you are an institutional manager and you have held any cash this year, that 24% for you is 22, 21, 20%. And you're desperate in this last month. You're looking at this market and saying, here we go, here we go. But I'll tell you, I would like your opinion on something. Little inside the market here. Yesterday, the market was doing kind of okay. It was actually doing pretty well.
Phenomenal.
Until you got that news of the Omicron case out in California. It's my belief that it's a lot of the algos out there that are just looking at these headlines and saying, sell it, sell it, sell it. I think the speed and the size of the reaction tells you that. You talk to a lot of hedge fund guys. I'm curious what you say.
I think there are two factors. It was the Omicron, which how can you be surprised at that, right?
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
It's asinine. But it was also the fact that people were looking for some sort of walk back by Powell in the testimony.
And didn't get it.
They didn't get it. So by not getting it, they said, whoa, he just doubled down. So the Fed's going to be more aggressive than I thought. And here's the issue why December may not be the typical seasonal upswing and the rally into the end is that, as I've said repeatedly, you've got two very important dates. You've got the 10th and the 14th when we get new inflation numbers. And you'll get other data also. You'll get jobs. And we'll see what wages do that first Friday in December. So if those numbers are strong, you're going to get talk of even more hikes. So I think that will hit the market. Look, markets go up over time for sure. But you generate your return depending upon when you buy in. And that may give you, in my view, I think you have to be a little cautious going into that. Because you can't sort of say two different things here. If the Atlanta Fed's right and GDP is 9% after coming off, what, a 2 to 3% GDP reading that we just had last quarter, that means the economy is exploding. If the economy is exploding, then inflation's going to explode with it. And we'll see those numbers and wages are going to explode. So that means that you've got a more aggressive Fed and that they will have to get in their horse and tighten more than once next year, which I already think it'll be two or three times.
Okay, Steve, I gotcha. And so that our listeners understand exactly what we're talking about, this is a time period in which good news can very well be taken as bad news by the market. And that's exactly what you're saying. Good news on the economy means the Fed will tighten more aggressively. Bad news for the market. I think it probably is that. However, that's ultimate short term, as far as I'm concerned. That is the exact noise that I want my investors, my clients to buckle their seatbelt and get through. Because in the long run, good news is good news. And I will absolutely take the Atlanta GDP FedNow numbers. I hear you on inflation. I'm not ignoring it. I do submit to you that you have green shoots of supply chain bottlenecks easing. Why do I say that? Okay. Because I know you. You're like, where is it? Where is it? Okay. First off, you're starting to see very tentative signs of the ports unclogging.
Down by 30% in LA.
Yeah. Here's another piece of news. Okay. GM just yesterday announced that they're increasing production. They're raising their guidance because they're getting more chips. All right. The chips are the epicenter, the ground zero of the supply chain bottleneck. I'm not going to sit here and say it's all clear sign. I'm not going to blow that whistle, but I am going to tell you there are green shoots. They look like they're taking hold as far as supply chain bottlenecks easing, which eventually should ease off on inflation.
Here's how I'm playing it. So I have been raising cash. I didn't do anything in the last 2 days in terms of raising cash because I don't want to sell on the dips. I sold just a little yesterday in a pop in one of my positions. I'm hoping to raise more cash. I'm hoping to get a pop over the next few days because there are some positions that are not the longest term positions for me. I want to have cash when the market does that dump, which I think is possible. I'd rather pay up a couple of percent than sit with stocks that I don't own for the long term going down 10%.
I got
so you. I'm looking, and some of those are high quality companies, but they're cyclical. And if they're going to raise rates, that cyclicality is going to come to play.
Great segue. Okay, I think we've given our listeners what they need to know as far as what we think of the markets overall right now. Why don't we do a little dive into one of our cyclicals? I think it's time to start diving in. Interesting news this morning, Boeing, which is something that you and I seem to be opposed on. In a second, you'll let our viewers know where you stand on it, but everybody knows I am long it. We got the news that China has recertified the 737 MAX. Here's my take on it. Consistent with what I've said all along. I think management here is terrible, okay? And if Calhoun, who's the CEO there, does the equivalent in NFL football of gets a first down and points with the football and does a mic drop on it or does the feed me motion, I'm going to lose my mind, all right? There's a long way to go on this drive with Boeing to get things
right. He's not doing that.
I wouldn't put it past this guy. But that said, okay, we've got a good piece of news.
What's it doing to the stock today?
It's up about 3.5%. Could be more. I'll grant you. I would like to see a bigger response.
Let's put this in perspective. It's up 3.5% from whatever, 190, 180 something, okay? Whereas, in fairness, when the stock was at 225, 230, you said the stocks can get a nice pop when they announced this China news, which everybody knew was coming, except maybe Calhoun. No, Calhoun actually said it. So here you are. So that's why playing for, and this is a different conversation, playing for an event in a down market, trying to trade these events is a losing strategy because the market's going to overwhelm, particularly in a major index stock like Boeing, which doesn't always trade in fundamentals. Thank God, by the way.
I've told you not to trade it. I've told you to invest in it. By the way, the stock was about—
It's been a crap investment too.
Over the last 6 months, yes. Over the last year and a half, no. And the point is, this is a multi-year
recovery. The last 4 years— It's down like 50%.
Okay, sorry.
Four years ago,
nobody saw COVID coming. And here's the point. The stock was 225 about a week and a half
ago. It didn't start trading down because of COVID. Let's be clear about that. It started trading down because of two planes that went down because of poor engineering with a company that over the last few years has had a horrendous record of safety and technology.
Problem solved. Okay, you're looking in the past. The problem's solved. This plane is
recertified. They just recently grounded planes. You're talking about the MAX.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the other parts of the fleet. Let's face it. You have a management team that presided over the destruction of shareholder value when Calhoun was chairman of the board. We don't have to replay this. He should not be at the company.
I actually agree with you. I'm not happy with Calhoun. So the reason that I'm in the stock is because there's a duopoly. You got air traffic increasing. And maybe it temporarily dips on Omicron, but that is temporary. You got air traffic increasing. You got high fuel prices. Airlines need new planes. And you have two choices. You go to Airbus, you'll get a plane 7-8 years. You go to Boeing, you'll get a plane 3-4 years. There's really no choice there. I mean, that's the power of a duopoly. But the point here is we can look back 2 years. We can look back 4 years. We can look back a week and a half. The point is we're supposed to look forward. We're in a multi-year recovery. And unless, this is the key point, unless you're saying there's a recession coming, this is a stock that's going to go higher. Okay. I don't think there's
stock
a recession
stock may
coming.
Go higher, but I'll take the last word in this, give you the last word in something after the show's over. But here's what I'd say on Boeing, okay? Boeing is in a terrible position with their customers, where they have not been able to deliver planes, where planes that they have delivered has been grounded because the FDA has issues with the safety. They are not in a position where they can bargain, even though it's a duopoly. Okay, they're not in a position where they can dictate price anymore because they've got to think long-term like you like to think and say, okay, yeah, Airbus, we don't know how much that backlog is real or isn't real, but maybe we don't make money on these planes like we used to make. And maybe our balance sheet's upside down. So there are so many issues. It's not as simple as you paint it. But let's turn
it's
to another
side. It's never as simple. That's where the opportunity
let's,
is.
Let's,
okay,
turn
let's
to
go
another
where
side.
You want to go.
Let's go with Apple. So you had some stories today that suppliers are saying that Apple has come out and said, hey, take it easy here on providing us with parts because the iPhone 13 isn't selling that well. And then I heard some inane comments today were saying, well, come on, nobody would ever leak that news because if Apple found out, they'd lose the contract. Well, that's absolutely right. But you know how many hundreds of thousands of people are involved in the supply chain? And you think that there's somebody with reporters working every minute of every day to get a story. This person who made that comment or people who have made that comment don't think that there's one person working at these companies who really doesn't give a darn or doesn't think about them losing a contract if they whisper, doesn't think they'll ever be found out. These people, they literally think it's impossible that somebody would say that they've asked us to slow down.
So I'm sorry, what's your point?
My point is that—
Actually, I'm not sorry. What's your point?
It very well could be happening. They could be saying, Okay. Because after all, the iPhone 13, what did it give you? Give you a better camera for another $1,000?
Let's talk about what do you do with the stock here. First off, let's acknowledge something. The thing was on fire up until yesterday. I mean, on fire, all right? So anybody who is looking at this stock and saying, this is the entry point, no. Okay?
Do you know why it was on fire?
I'll listen to you.
It was on fire because there's a rebalancing going on. There was tremendous options activity there. And because of that, people thought there's something going on here. So this has been a momentum market. It was a rare bright spot in the market. So then others went in to buy it. They're clearly, Apple's one of the most secretive companies. So there clearly was nothing fundamental going on to drive that, as we know today.
I think this is a good opportunity to repeat something I've said before about Apple. You should not expect the performance on this stock for the next 5 years or even the next year to mirror what it has been the last 5 years or the last year.
Sure.
Let's put numbers to that. Up 45% per annum over the last 5 years. Should not expect that. What you should expect—
with 2 years of flat revenue and flat earnings, flat to down.
God, you're so angry today. We're actually kind of saying the same thing.
You are pissing me off, Jim.
Well, that
and
makes
Joe
me
here
happy.
Sitting in the room, our engineer, is really getting under my skin.
I know.
Skin.
He's a young man. He's like, what is with these guys? Yeah. They're at each other's throat. This is how we roll,
calm
baby.
Down, Joe.
This
take
is how
it
we
easy.
Roll.
Take it
okay.
easy.
Okay. Now that we've used Joe as our foil. Here's what you should expect from Apple in the next year. You should expect the net income line on the profit and loss to grow 5-6%. Steve, don't argue with me about it. Just give me the 5-6%. They're going to buy back some shares. The earnings per share are going to go up about 10%. Multiple stays the same. Maybe it goes down, but stays the same. I think 26 times forward earnings, I'm comfortable with that. You should get a 10% growth in the share price of Apple over the next year. And I'm laughing. I'm chuckling. You caught it, right? Because when that happens, investors are going to scream to Congress, shut the markets. Apple's only up 10%. Oh, my God. I mean, we'll be laughing at this over the next year.
Yeah, look, I own Apple. It's core holding, staying there because of that, because of the balance sheet. I think they could do so much more with the company than what they're doing. Because they have huge cash. They're a leader in what they're doing. Not a market leader. Their market share is not in the lead in iPhones. It is in the U.S., but not other places. But here's why I'm angry. I'm losing money. I don't know about you, but that makes me freaking angry, Jim. You know, I'm sorry. I'm human, and I hate to lose money, right?
And I'm telling you, the markets are going back up, all right? I'm your therapist.
I just wish I had a more reliable source. Then I'd feel more comfort.
I'm your therapist.
Okay,
here.
Actually, but on Apple.
Actually, I get it, by the way. This is not a week that any of us are feeling good. Let's be clear
about
that.
But going back to Apple, Apple's fine. If you want to spend your time worrying about something, don't worry about Apple. It's a leading member of the index. And going back to that, it's within a certain band, unless it really screws up or really excels in a product, going to stay there. The issue with Apple is if the telcos ever come out and say, we're not going to subsidize. And if they do that, then you've got a major issue because not too many people are going to dig into their pockets and pay right now when it's T-Mobile and it's Verizon, it's AT&T paying 80 to 100% of the phone and financing for you for free. So why not upgrade?
Man, I don't feel like my phone has been subsidized, but I'm in the market for a new phone. I am going to throw one thing out there. These new iOS upgrades are driving me crazy. Honestly, I have to say this. I'm driving 20 hours for Thanksgiving last weekend. The iPhone Maps keeps telling me, here's a route that will take you 17 minutes longer, 35 minutes longer.
Who uses iPhone Maps? Joe, you use iPhone Maps?
Why you got to be this way?
You use Waze.
We're talking about Apple.
You use Waze. You don't use iPhone Maps.
I'm a little upset.
Use Google Maps.
I'm a little upset that Joe is nodding in agreement with you.
Nobody. I've never heard anybody using Apple Maps. I think Tim Cook uses Waze.
Yeah, right.
Really? I mean,
we'll tweet out a poll later on. Apple Maps versus Waze. I'll grant you Waze is fine, but my point still stands, Steve, that these iOS upgrades suck. They suck. And who is it that decided that, all right, the reason we should upgrade this is so that the website address is at the bottom of the screen instead of the top of the screen? Like, who cares? Who cares? Why did I need that? The answer is I didn't.
I hear you. Well, as long as we're getting to pet peeves, you know what my pet peeve was driving here today? It's always an Odyssey minivan in the left lane going 40 miles an hour. Come on. Get out of that lane. If I were a cop, I'd give tickets to the people in the left lane going slow rather than the middle or right lane going fast. We got to get to where we're going. We got to be more productive, not hang out in that damn left lane. Those people should be pulled over. And in fact, it should be a capital punishment. They should be locked up. See how quickly you get traffic flowing. And by the way, that'll be good for the environment. Okay? Less stopping and starting.
Steve, I don't think you've looked at the market today. We're up. Okay, it's green on the screen.
So I can feel better.
It's green on the screen now.
NASDAQ too?
I will grant, actually, I got to look at that. I will grant you, it's only 10 o'clock and the market could turn down between now and 10:05. The NASDAQ is up, but as you would expect, the Dow is up big because of Boeing. It's a cyclical
day. I was now, making so much money yesterday and then I had to go to some meetings and left my screen. I come back, I'm broke.
Why do you want to live that life? Why do you want to live that life?
It's my
Leave
training.
The dark side of the force. Come to where it's light it's sunny and happy and be a long-term investor.
You know, I am long-term majority of my portfolio. I've thought of that, but keep in mind my history, my background.
I know. It keeps you active, keeps you alive and vibrant. Yeah. And we want that, Steve, despite the fact
like a shark. If you don't move, you die. You drown
despite the fact
die.
That you are a prickly porcupine, man. Nobody better hug you.
So what happens, Jim? Let's go back to where this started. What happened?
By the way, we got other things to talk about. Talk about the 10-year. We'll talk about commodities. Right. Talk about crude oil. By the way,
I'm short the 10-year at this point. I've shorted it at, I think it was a 1.45 yield. What's it going to do? What's my risk? To a 1.35? I'd need the country to shut down. So I think it's going up the other way.
It's consistent
I think that's
with
a great
thesis.
Trade.
It's consistent with your thesis. I won't argue it.
I added to Goldman the other day. I actually added to the XLF a little bit.
On the thesis of higher interest rates.
Exactly, when they drop down. But I just want to ask one more question on the variant Omicron. What happens?
It's Omicron. It's not Omnicron.
Omicron.
It's not everywhere is cron. It's Omicron.
Omicron. I know that. You just hear poorly. What happens if we hear about 100 cases over the next week? What do you think the market does?
I'm not sure what the significance is of 100. Are you saying a lot or a
little?
Yeah,
a lot. I'm just saying it keeps adding up.
So let's both of us be honest, as you were earlier, that we don't know. Having said that disclaimer, here's what we are reading. Here's what we are hearing. So far, symptoms are mild. So far, we don't know if the vaccines are effective or not. But your buddies at Moderna think they'll have a vaccine that is specific for this variant in early 2022. I don't know what early 2022 means. I don't know if that's January.
They said March.
Okay. 3 months away? All right.
Well, the market will trade up when, but that includes the regulatory process. They could have the vaccine actually two weeks after they identify the variants completely.
I'm in a good mood. There's green on the screen. Don't bring up the FDA. Come on. I'm in a good mood.
I'm sorry. I apologize. All right. Actually, I like seeing you get ruffled.
Listen, 3 months is a longer period than I would like. However, it's a lot shorter than what it took for the original alpha variant of COVID to be found a vaccine.
Oh,
and
sure.
By the way, okay, so we still don't know. We don't know the transmissibility. We don't know the severity, although initial indications are mild. We don't know the effectiveness of the vaccines. I'm going to tell you something.
And the markets hate unknowns.
They do, but that's why it's down almost 5% through yesterday.
Wow.
I know. Call your congressman. Shut the markets.
Let's move on. You're right.
I think human psyche matters here. Now, maybe this is too anecdotal, but I'm going to do it anyway, and you'll have fun with it. Do you watch any college football last weekend? I don't generally watch college football.
I did watch
Auburn.
Did
you see these stadiums? Yeah, Michigan versus Ohio State, 111,000 people. This is not a country that wants to stop doing what it's doing right now, which is living life.
I agree with you.
So I'll grant you.
And I think we should run on the intellect of 18-year-olds at colleges. They're not dictating what we're doing, okay? When you're 18, like Dave Tepper tells me, when you're 18 to 25, you're a moron. You're stupid. You know nothing, right? That's what he says. So he won't hire anybody under 25. He said, when you turn 25, then you start getting a little smart. Things start meaning something to you. You have a little more experience. You've hopefully listened to more people. But I'm not going as an indication of where this country is going by listening to 18-year-olds who have come from frat and sorority houses and are so wobbly from drinking way too much beer that they're dictating the country.
All right, you've made the point, but how about TSA traveler throughput? Those numbers are unassailable. How about anybody who's been driving? Anybody who's been driving sees
the
traffic.
No, I agree, the traffic coming in.
I mean, look.
There's no appetite. Shut down. That's not the issue, Jim.
I walked over here. We're on the kind of far west side. I walked over from Grand Central. I'll tell you what, New York City's back. I mean, you are bumping into people. It is old school New York, man. It is like, you better not slow down when you're crossing the street. You better not. You will cause a collision.
I agree. But let's move on to some other topics. What else would you like to address today?
Well, you touched on the 10-year, and I think that's valid. I completely agree interest rates should go higher. And 142, which is where we are right now, is a meaningless number. It's a silly number. Let the market gain its footing. It's just another number that has been wildly impacted by the news this week, as has crude oil. Down meaningfully from roughly 80-ish to now roughly 65-ish. Two things here. One, demand is still really quite high, apropos of what we're seeing on the roads, apropos of those airplane figures. The second thing is OPEC is the one that controls things here. They can just sit back and say, you know what? We're not going to go through with those production increases. And they'll jack the market back up to 80. And they're going to do it. They're not going to sit here at 65. They'll give the market a little time to work out what's going on with Omicron. But then if this goes on at $65 for West Texas Intermediate for another couple of weeks, they're going to say, screw it. We're not doing the production.
Let me ask a question, okay? In oil, how much of the money in the markets or how much of the price of oil is dictated by speculators?
So you and I are older than we'd like to admit. And the answer is not as much as it used to be. And you know that factually.
And why is that?
Because it doesn't matter as much.
And because they failed.
Who's they? The integrated oils companies?
No, because the speculators.
Okay.
Okay, some of the best.
It never seemed like a good idea
right.
Other than who's that guy? Mark Hall?
Andy Hall.
Andy Hall.
Okay, so if you take a guy like Andy Hall, who was the god when it came to, could do no wrong in predicting and investing in oil, both when he was at Credit Suisse and then when he moved over into his own fund. And then what happened? He blew up. So if the smartest people in the oil market, and I can give you others, commodity hedge funds, in my experience, last 2 or 3 years, then they're toast.
Last 10 to 12 years.
Right. So if the smartest people that spend every waking minute and have contacts to OPEC ministers, to everything, can't figure out the price of oil, how can you be so arrogant to say, I got it, it's going from 65 to 80? To me, that's why oil is a momentum trade, it's uninvestable, and much more of it is driven by speculators in the market than by OPEC.
This is a big day, Steve. This is a big day that you are accusing somebody of being arrogant, but okay.
You like that though, right? There was love behind that, Jim.
I know.
Did you feel the love?
Do you hear me laughing?
Yes, there was love.
Okay. Actually, it's a good point because it allows me to elaborate. This isn't about the price of oil. This is the price of energy stocks, which continue to be in an intermediate trading zone where you can be long these things. And actually, it doesn't matter whether it's $65 or $85, as long as it's not $45 and headed south that way, which I just don't think it is. I'll grant you.
Your point, it's not static.
You're absolutely right. Look at how long oil was up above $70 a barrel. It's been up there for months and months and months. And that's time frame that these oil companies are just printing money. I'll grant you, there is a hell of a lot of uncertainty. A hell of a lot of uncertainty about the price of oil. But the oil prices right now are high enough and demand is strong enough that they should stay high enough for these oil companies to be making a ton of money. I think that's a place to be.
I think that was last year's trade. It was most of this year's trade. And
last year when you were calling it uninvestable?
It's tradable. It's uninvestable. To me, investable is you own it
that's
for
as
years.
Mean as, that's as mean as I'm going to get to.
Yeah.
Do you know that? That's it.
You can be meaner.
I can't. You know. I can't punch you. You've got a lovable face despite the words that come out of your mouth.
Well, thank you, Jim. But please keep your distance. Look, it's tradable. Trades can last for a long period of time. But when I say it's uninvestable, I stick with that. It's not something you put away and hold forever. That may have been the old days way back.
No, I agree.
But it's not
right,
the case
Steve,
now.
Steve, green energy is coming. This is a transitional moment in fossil fuel. By no means is
it Chevron's where it was 10 years ago.
I don't care about 10 years ago. I care about where it's going in the next 6 months, and it's higher.
Okay, well, I hope
again,
you're right.
Again, Mr. Arbitrary, you were the one who was saying arbitrary time frames 10 years ago.
It's not investable.
You were bringing up the button tree earlier. Jesus.
My point is that it's not investable.
Do people even know about the button tree? Do you think people know? That's
yeah,
where the
it
New
is
stock
a tree that grows
got
buttons.
And I have to go downtown to the stock exchange today.
Oh.
Yeah.
They're going to let you in?
I'll wipe some cobwebs away.
Okay. Good.
From your picture on the wall, I'll wipe the cobwebs away.
There's a few pictures of me on the wall. So we talked about 10-year. Let's just flesh that out a little bit. So the 10-year is down on, not Powell, but on the variant, on the virus. That's why it's down.
I think you'll agree with this. Some would say it's also down on the idea that if the Fed gets aggressive now, they're too early, they're going to turn the economy down.
That's too many cross currents for me.
I tend to agree. I'm just saying what's out there.
And that's too far in advance. I don't think that's the case. There's also
we're both going to agree that 10 years is too low.
It's too low. And so I think that's a very good setup right now for financial stocks. Goldman was trading above 400, nicely above 400, not that long ago, got down to, I forget where I picked it up, maybe 385, 375, don't recall. The earnings power there is great. The curve will steepen. The XLF, if you want to play the index, I think that's a good trade here. It's held up pretty nicely, hasn't given up a lot. B of A is another one I own. I think that's a great stock. Moynihan is the most unsung banking CEO there is who has done just all the right things despite coming into a much more challenging environment because of his predecessor, where they didn't even know, having spoken to people that were on the board, they had no idea where their risk was with O'Neill there. So it's
Stan O'Neill?
Stan O'Neill going way back.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, it was Merrill Lynch before Merrill Lynch was acquired by Bank of America.
Exactly. He moved up.
Steve, I totally agree. Financials are a place to be right now. There is some talk in the market about the earnings next year being down over this year versus the financials.
But also, here's the one wild card. If Biden continues to kowtow the progressives, including the individual that he's nominating to be or thought to be nominating, the number one banking regulator.
Well, she got canned.
Not talking about her. Oh. The new guy, I forget his name. Whatever, but there was somebody else that surfaced as somebody being nominated just this week. That can be particularly troubling. So if they go progressive, and that's my fear. And then you'll have midterm elections. So there's so much news coming out over the next 6 months or so. How's the market holding up? I know you're looking.
Up about 1% on the S&P 500. Dow's up more. Of course, Boeing's helping. But honestly, there's a good cyclical tilt today.
Well, it's not surprising. They got destroyed.
And that's exactly the point that we started with. And that's actually why I was saying that. It gives me an opportunity.
Cliff, I saw was bouncing pre-market.
Interesting story. Because here's why I want to bring this up right now is what we're talking about here all the time is what is the market anticipating? Okay. Because I said Atlanta now and you said blah, blah, blah. It sucks. It's one quarter. And what about the last quarter? And what about the next quarter? Where we are right now with the markets, and Cleveland Cliffs is an example, is things are phenomenally good. I'm going to give you some numbers in a second. The market has been saying, but it's going to turn down. The market's been saying that for months and months and months. Just yesterday, Cleveland Cliffs announced a buyback of a convertible that's due in 2025, which, because the converts are in the money, is actually a share buyback. I love it. Okay. What I love more is it's an indication of free cash flow. It's an indication, along with the fact that they just made an acquisition of a scrap metal supplier, so they're further integrating their whole company. The point being is that the free cash flow is there. And this is true for most of these cyclicals. The free cash flow is there. The market has been clobbering these stocks because it says, yeah, it's going to change. It's going to change. But after a while, that story loses its punch. I think it should be losing its punch now.
I want to talk about a name that's not a cyclical, and Salesforce, Salesforce.com. Do you own that?
Oh, Steve.
Do you own it,
Jim? Yes, I do, Steve. Oh, you know I own it. Yes. Okay, so I'll play this game with you.
I think we talked about that
in the last episode. And I won't bring up Moderna or any of the other names.
Yeah, Moderna's still up 20 times. But
it's down 40%.
Here's why I want to talk about Salesforce.
Yes.
And just revisit the conversation.
Yes.
And I'm sure there'll be times when I'm wrong,
although you won't admit it.
You have to be patient.
Although you won't admit it.
But
yes, keep going.
Salesforce, my concern was that they have been buying growth because they're relatively mature in their markets. They've gotten bigger. It's a roll-up strategy. And so they have to keep making bigger and bigger acquisitions to move the needle. So what came out yesterday was a disappointing number. The stock's down. What's it down now? 10%? 8%?
It's off 20% from 52-week high. Your Moderna's off 40%. And it's up fourfold over the last 5 years. I completely disagree.
Moderna's up 20-fold over the last year.
All right.
So let's not compare those two. It's apples and oranges.
Yeah,
it's rotten apples in your case.
It's down 40%.
Buoyant,
it's down 40% from its 52-week high.
Smelling citrus oranges.
It's down 40% from its 52-week high versus Salesforce down 20%.
Right.
But here's the point. This is not a roll-up. Yes, they bought Slack. That was a good idea.
They've made other acquisitions along the way. They've made a number of acquisitions.
Steve, their organic growth is phenomenal. I mean, it's unassailable. And you talk to customers of this company, and they love it.
You're not getting that for free. What's the multiple? What's the EBITDA multiple in this company?
It's a little expensive. That's why it's a small position.
And that's why it's trading down.
Listen,
and my tent really was
actually, you and I are going to agree that we don't like high multiple stocks. We're going to agree with that. I don't want to back myself
into
a corner.
I like when they're on the upswing in terms of their earnings growth, not when they're flattening out their earnings growth in terms of what it is. I don't mean flat growth. I mean that the fundamentals don't keep improving. Momentum is sort of flattening.
I think you're missing the quality of this business. And the quality of this business in terms
of the organic growth. It's a high quality business.
Yeah.
I don't make money in businesses. I make money in stocks.
So here's the point I would make is that we both agree it's a high multiple stock. That is why it is for me a very small position. And I'm looking to add to it. This quarter came out 2 days ago. It's actually right now in the time frame where I would add to it. You and I are talking here today, so I can't do it. But when we come back next week, I probably will have added to it.
Can I talk about one more just because it's so topical this week? Twitter. So Twitter, Jack Dorsey finally steps away, as he should have done. What poor governance. How can you run two major companies? He's obviously said, I'm going to go to Square, which is now Block. So we'll hear many more companies with some variant of Block, blockchain, or metaverse, something like that. So it leaves Twitter. So they promote an engineer at Twitter to be CEO. Somebody's been there for a long time. Now, you've had prior CEOs that just haven't been able to do it there. You've had high-quality people like Anthony Noto, like Frank Costello. They can't do it.
Yep.
People got to give up the ghost on Twitter.
I'm not a believer in Twitter.
Okay. It's Look, I'm on it a lot. I'm on it a lot, but it's toxic. And back when there was talk about Disney buying it, never going to happen.
No.
Do you want that when you've got this great brand? Do you want Twitter to mar that brand? Nobody's buying Twitter.
Steve, you're pushing my buttons here. I think you know you're pushing my buttons. I think Twitter is awful as a stock. I think it's awful as a social media platform. I'm on it. You're on it. We see a lot of the things. Who needs to 24 hours a day have somebody calling you fat and stupid? Even if you're an adult.
I don't want to get into your home life. Let's stick on Twitter.
No. People love me at home.
Okay.
People love me at home. People love me in general, Steve. Okay. In fact, most people love me. You're the exception. But no, seriously, as a human being, and it's not just me, it's not just you, it's not just Joe here in the room with us, who needs this 24 hours a day to people tell you you suck? Like, you just don't need it. And I think, and I'm mad at myself because once in a while, and you see it because you follow me on Twitter, once in a while I take the bait and I go back at one of these idiot trolls.
Don't respond. I respond as well sometimes. You just can't help it.
You just can't help it. And then you're like, you know what? I just wasted 20 minutes of my time and so much of my mental energy. Why do I do it? I seriously think somebody has one follower.
Not you, the person
attacking you. And listen, I'm just one man, but I'm emblematic. I'm seriously thinking about just giving up on Twitter. To hell with it. Screw it.
It's a marketing tool. That's why to use it. Okay, and it's a news source, in fairness.
I'll tell you what. It is a news source.
It's a convenient news source.
That's true. Train was stuck the other day. I went to Twitter to see what's going on. You're right. However, I do think that the problem here is that the daily average users hasn't grown for years. And it's not going to grow while it's the cesspool of the worst that humanity has.
Can I tell you what else pisses me off while we're talking about things that piss me off today?
What is this, like old man's being grumpy today?
Can I tell you...
Old men? There are so many. Old men.
This will lead to another topic that we talked about a few episodes ago, which is every ad is a gaming ad. Every ad is a sports betting ad. And that shows why you don't want to be in those stocks.
Sports betting stocks
can't make you money. Their customer acquisition costs are through the roof. There's no competitive advantage. Sure, you may have El Presidente following that guy, his core. You may have a core like Caesar and JB Smoove, who I love. But otherwise, they're not going to make you money. There's no way to distinguish their offerings.
I think you're teeing us up for our next episode. Because when you say gaming, what I think about is the gamification of investing. And we're going to have a nice long talk next time about Mr. Gensler at the SEC and where he's headed. You've said some things on air. I've said some things on air. Gamification of trading is probably going to be decreasing a lot as long as this guy is the sheriff in town.
Well, if there are things he can actually do about it, and it takes forever for the SEC to move. But there are some other interesting SEC topics, and we can talk about that next time. So
we'll be back in a few days.
Yep. Yeah. Is this a good way to end it, Jim?
Yeah.
On this?
Market's green on the screen.
Okay. I see your cut man waiting outside to come in and patch you up. So let's do it. So, Jim, you know I love you. Been fun. Been great. Let's call this a wrap, and we'll look forward to the next one.
You're a good man, Steve Weiss, despite what people say about you.
And to our listeners, thanks so much for listening again and bearing with us this week.
Indeed. Thank you. Be well.
Jim Labenthal is an investment advisor representative of Cerity Partners and holds the Chartered Financial Analyst designation. Jim Labenthal and Cerity Partners are unaffiliated with Stephen Weiss. The securities discussed in this podcast by Jim, unless otherwise stated to the contrary, are securities that Jim either manages within the current client portfolios or owned by Jim personally. You should not consider the information discussed as personalized investment, tax, or legal advice, or a solicitation to buy or sell any specific security. There's no guarantee that views and opinions expressed in this podcast will come to pass or a guarantee of future performance. Investing involves risk, and before investing, you should consult a qualified professional advisor. Stephen Weiss is not a registered investment advisor and is not affiliated with any regulated entity. The views and opinions he expresses are his own and are not intended to be advice or recommendations. Stephen does not guarantee the accuracy of his statements or views. Investors should perform their own due diligence and not rely upon the information contained in this podcast as the sole basis for their investments.